This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We're trying to trace the origin of flying saucers. So I get back to the nitty-gritty here, and that is how much of that pop culture filtered through what Kenneth Arnold attempted to describe.
Well, yeah, it's certainly interesting how for several decades in pulp fiction and science fiction, flying saucers became one of the standard designs for spaceships. Really, it started in 1887 with the publication of a book called Bellona's Husband, which basically talks about humans who design a spacecraft, which they called the Ethereal Disc. Flew it up into space to Mars, discover that all of the other planets too had designed disc-shaped craft, that the author of the book, William James Rowe, says that the meteorites that we see in the sky are actually discs which had been driven from other planets towards the Earth and have not been able to land on Earth because they explode in the atmosphere. They burn up, and that's what we see as meteorites. It was just a novel. But the fact is it was published in 1887, which was when the interest in this new invention, the clay flying saucer, was at its peak. So this is what probably triggered several decades of saucer-shaped spacecraft, because everyone knew what that meant, the flying saucers used in the sport. This is such an aerodynamic design. So when we get to Kenneth Arnold's sighting, people were primed for it. People were prepared to believe in saucer-shaped spaceships because they'd seen them on magazine covers. And then what I do in the book, I show that there were even stories at the beginning of the 20th century of abductions, actual flying saucers that landed and abducted people, took them back into space. That appeared first in science fiction and then only later on in ufology. So, I'd say that quite a lot of that trickled through into the Arnold period.
Tim,
in any of those 1920, 1930s pulp science fiction magazines, were any of these spacecrafts ever referred to as flying saucers?
No, they weren't. No, they weren't. They were called discs. They were painted. I mean, the images. I've actually got a whole chapter on this in the book. If you look at it, you could believe that it was that these were drawn 30 years ago or 20 years ago, because they really do look like flying saucers. Some of them were sort of with the portals around them and so on. They had everything to do with flying saucers, minus the name. But of course, in the 20s and 30s, people called the clay discs flying saucers, as well as clay pigeons and other names. But flying saucers was the most popular term. So you would never have called these spaceships flying saucers in science fiction. It would have been absurd. People would have said, why do you call it a flying saucer? That's what we catapult into the air for people to shoot at. So there was no reason to give them that name until, of course, these original reports of Kenneth Arnold's sighting equated flying saucers with alien spaceships for the first time.
Well, talking about Kenneth Arnold, initially, did he offer any opinions on what he thought he may have seen? Because, you know, like you said, initially, a lot of the early speculation dealt with the man-made types of craft, you know, secret Air Force, maybe even Russian or Nazi Germany. What was Kenneth Arnold offering at the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning, he believed that they were terrestrial technology. He wasn't sure what to believe. Some of his pilot friends said that they could be missiles. His pilot friends actually had told him that they'd been warned that they might even come across this kind of technology at some point in the future. So he had he wasn't really sure what they were, but he did insist that they should be called strange airplanes. They should be called something other than flying saucer, because he was so sure that they were technology, that they were planes. So it wasn't very long later that he started to think that they were probably from another planet himself. So I mean, when you find a lot of people did. I wouldn't say most people. We can't know how many people really did, but. This is a conversation I've had with Jerome Clark and with other people in the past. How many people believe that these might be alien spaceships? There was a Gallup poll, and in that Gallup poll, nobody said that they were alien spaceships. But at the same time, there were dozens of newspaper comments constantly, from the very beginning, saying that Arnold had seen Martians and had seen extraterrestrials and so on. So this was something in people's minds. And I'm not surprised that Kenneth Arnold changed his mind quickly and reached the opinion that these were extraterrestrials, you know. Was it June the 27th, 1947? Arnold was sitting in a cafe in Pendleton, and a woman rushed in, took one look at him, and then dashed out shrieking, "There's the man who saw the men from Mars!" So, I mean, immediately he was immersed in this world in which people equated what he saw with spaceships. So, I'm preparing a short book, actually, which will show that people from the very beginning thought that Arnold had seen aliens. And as I said, that's quite a controversial point. A lot of ufologists and don't believe that at all, but the evidence is there.
Seems almost like the world was primed to consider the reality of extraterrestrial visitors after the end of World War II. I think primarily, and as you've pointed out, because of all the pop culture with the pulp magazines that people had been reading for, you know, a couple of decades. And, I mean, thousands of people were reading this material. So I don't think that it's a far stretch that you start seeing strange things in the sky, that the assumption immediately goes to extraterrestrial visitors.
Well, what people aren't really aware of, and what I tried to do with Volume 1 of my book, Alien Artifacts, and I'm about to publish Volume 2, I show that people were not only aware of the possibility of alien visits in the early 19th century, so we're talking about the 1820s, 1830s, but they were almost equally obsessed with the possibility that aliens were visiting us more than 100 years before Kenneth Arnold. I mean, the ancient aliens hypothesis dates from 1823. That was a book published in French, and I have a whole chapter on this in Alien Artifacts, in which a businessman who traveled to Germany was quite interested in these rocks that he saw there, and he reached the conclusion that these had formed part of a planet that had exploded. And at that time, everyone was fascinated by the discovery of the asteroids, and so he put two and two together, and he said, well, maybe that planet that exploded that the astronomers are talking about, maybe parts or remnants of that civilization landed on Earth. And if parts of that civilization landed on Earth, maybe actual people did too. Aliens had escaped that planet like Superman escaped the planet Krypton.
Before we get into the Man of Steel, who can leap tall buildings with a single bound, and bend steel with his bare hands. Why am I doing this? Chris Hawbeck, Gene Steinberg, Tim Swartz, you're in
The Paracast!
Hey, listeners, I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices start at just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
It's obvious. The unthinkable continues. Most Americans know something very wrong is happening. People in charge keep telling you that everything's fine and to stop noticing. But you know better. That's why self-reliant folks are investing in emergency food storage. And you should, too. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, are the ones you can trust. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling three-month emergency food kits. Each contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $200 on each three-month food kit you purchase. My Patriot Supply also sells solar generators, gravity-powered water filters, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your items ship that same day and arrive quickly on your doorstep in unmarked boxes. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today. Time is running out to prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from wallofire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Wallofire.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
But I was thinking, based on what you said, Chris, what about the possibility that we humans are descended from a race of extraterrestrials? Of course, that goes back to the second generation Battlestar Galactica TV show, where Ronald D. Moore took the basis of the original rather cheesy show and made it into something more thought-provoking. But at the end, here's a spoiler, they land on Earth 100,000 years ago.
That's right. Actually, in Alien Artifacts, I mentioned Battlestar Galactica because it probably had a big impact on me when I was a kid watching that. But what people didn't realize until I published this book was how old this theory is. So, as I said, it goes back to 1823, which means that this year is the 200th anniversary of the ancient alien theory. It's something that we should celebrate in some way, maybe. I don't know. But the fact is that in the 1880s, there was already speculation that the Easter Island statues had been built by aliens or the descendants of aliens. There was talk of the pyramids having been built by aliens. There were people talking about the 10th planet. There were people talking about how our ancestors had come from the sky and had been originally the people on Earth, the primitive people on Earth, the Neolithics, had interpreted them, seen them as devils or gods. And these ideas are over 150 years old. So we can even find lots of philosophers throughout the 19th century saying Adam and Eve had come from other planets. They even tried to pinpoint which planets they had come from, which was also a part of Mormon belief at the time. And, of course, the Mormons are also related to Battlestar Galactica, aren't they, because of Glenn A. Larson. He was a Mormon. So it's very interesting how this theory is so old. And in Alien Artifacts, I managed to piece this together for the first time. So I trace all the way back to 1823. But what I show in the second volume of that series, Alien Artifacts 2, is just how frequently people spoke about crashed UFOs, aliens running around sort of on the loose in towns, even abductions or abduction stories going back to the 1860s. It's crazy. And lots and lots of alien artifacts. And then when we get to the beginning of the 20th century, it does not stop. It's simply that we've forgotten about it. So you get to the 1920s, there was one farmer who in North America who found what he believed was the cranium, the skull of an alien whose spaceship would have exploded in the atmosphere. And he said, now we've got to band together and look for the rest of his body. So he organized a search party among the neighbors to see if they could find the mortal remains of this crashed alien man. He didn't even talk about the spaceship, just the body, just the skeleton that would be somehow sort of scattered around the fields. And this was in all the newspapers, of course. And that's the way things were for decades and decades. Then, of course, when you get to October 1946, newspapers were full of headlines saying extraterrestrial spaceship seen over San Diego. So, because a bullet-shaped object had been seen flying over San Diego, and people quickly reached the opinion that these were aliens. They had a medium who contacted the pilots and said that the spaceship itself was called Carita, but they wouldn't tell him what planet they'd come from. And I've always thought that should have triggered the whole UFO scene itself, because that was just a few months before Kenneth Arnold. So, yeah, when we get to 1947, people were incredibly ready to hear about aliens. I mean, for example, on June the 22nd, 2 days before Arnold reported his sighting, Dr. Lyman Spitzer Jr., an associate professor of astrophysics at Yale University, spoke about extraterrestrial visitations on WTIC radio. And he said that if Martians were millions of years more evolved than humans, their technology would be so far ahead of us. And if that was the case, We could never photograph them. We'd never see them. We wouldn't have any chance at all because they'd escape detection. And then, of course, 2 days later, Kenneth Arnold had his sighting. So, the world was ready.
Everything old is new again. Really, really strange how far this goes back. Why was all this material that you discovered essentially forgotten? Is it because we didn't have the mass media we have today?
Yeah, that's one reason. But, you know, I mean, there are a lot of urban legends which get recycled every 5 or 6 years, even these days, as if it were the first time. And it's because we're just so bombarded with information, it's very difficult to keep up. They just change the names, change the places, but urban legends are a reality, and we just keep recycling the same old stories. At that time, of course, people couldn't consult 20-year-old newspapers, 10-year-old newspapers, and, of course, people's lifespans were also shorter. So it was more difficult to pass down information in this way from generation to generation. Not everybody could read anyway. There weren't any specialized magazines and for all kinds of esoteric things, including UFOs. Of course, there were lots of mystical magazines during the spiritualist period, during that movement, but they didn't normally talk about UFO sightings. So that information was lost. I mean, the fact that from the 1950s onwards, people had forgotten that we'd spent 60 years using the expression flying saucers to describe this object used in trap shooting and skeet, and then suddenly flying saucers had a totally different meaning. Even Kenneth Arnold, and I've spoken to Kim Arnold about this, he wasn't aware that flying saucers had been used in sport for 60 years. He thought that he had accidentally coined this expression himself. That's how easy it is for people just to forget the past. Just in 2 or 3 years, you can just totally forget what you were doing before that. I mean, I give classes to young people. They don't have a clear memory of their lives before the COVID pandemic, before wearing masks, which is amazing, really. You know, the human mind is quite fragile, and our memories are fragile.
I suspect very much here Ray Palmer, being a student of history and just read so much because of the fact he grew up and he was handicapped and everything, and he was aware of a lot of this, I'm sure. We've got Chris Jean. Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
As the cold and flu season approaches, Silver Lungs is ready to help you and your family through the toughest of the year by supporting your immune system and overall health. From our best-selling colloidal silver generating system to our entire line of silver-based skin gels, nasal sprays, soaps, and silver solutions, Silver Solutions remain one of nature's most powerful and least expensive antibacterial agents. Now you can produce your own for pennies a day in the comfort of your home using the breakthrough technology of the Silver Lungs Generator. Learn more today at www.silverlungs.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
USA News Update. A woman on methamphetamines tried to open the emergency door on a plane 10 hours into a Korean Air flight. The flight was over the Pacific when the 26-year-old woman, high on the stimulant, became paranoid and agitated, ran to the emergency exit door and tried to force it open. Passengers say flight attendants wrestled her to the floor and restrained her. Airport police took her into custody when the plane landed safely several hours later. Cops reportedly had her tested and determined she was high on methamphetamine. It's apparently the third time this year that a passenger has tried to open an emergency door on a Korean flight. A project manager, Tavis Rogers, fired by Newmont Mining Corporation for missing a COVID-19 vaccination deadline, has filed a lawsuit alleging religious discrimination. Rogers, employed for 7 months, raised concerns about the vaccination requirement issued in November 2021. He sought permission to work remotely instead of getting vaccinated, but the lawsuit claims the company did not accommodate his request, leading to his termination. Skip Kelly, USA News.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
This is James Fox, director of The Phenomenon and Moment of Contact. You're listening to The Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So we're on with Chris Aubeck, taking a fascinating journey through the history that you never knew, although it's out there if you do the research. Like I said, I think when Ray Palmer was coming up with a lot of this stuff for his various publications, especially you had Amazing Stories, he probably knew some of this before he brought it up and then was able to take the Schaefer stories and give it the context. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, how many magazines would have he read during his lifetime? How many people would have sent to him letters about UFOs and strange lights that they'd seen in the sky? He was probably very well aware of all of this. I mean, Vincent Gaddis's article, Visitors from the Void, was available in kiosks the day that Kenneth Arnold took his flight on the 24th of June. If he'd stopped to buy Amazing Stories on the way to the East Oregonian offices and read this Vincent Gaddis article about how weird objects had been seen in the sky and maybe they were visitors from other planets, he might not have even gone to the newspaper offices. He might have said, well, obviously that explains what I've just seen, you know, because people were already talking about this kind of thing.
Vincent Gaddis, I remember him. I had a magazine out in the 70s and 80s, and he wrote for us occasionally.
Yeah, I believe he contributed to the Bermuda Triangle story too, didn't he?
I think he did, yes. That's another story we can go into, but would require another book, I think, on your part. Although I kind of wonder how Bermuda Triangle got mixed in with the UFOs, but then when you're talking about possible disappearing objects, I guess it makes sense. I know that the guy who probably made the most money off the Bermuda Triangle is Charles Berlitz. He had a best-selling book on the subject. And he was a little guy, slightly stout, and he had this twinkle in his eyes. And he'd look at me, and he'd say, "I'm as honest as the day is long."
And of course, he was also the heir to the Berlitz language schools, to tie it back to what we said at the beginning.
Yeah, he was grandson, and therefore he was a spoiled rich kid. So I think he indulged himself by chasing Bermuda Triangle, chasing the Philadelphia Experiment, and chasing, fortunately or unfortunately, Roswell.
Yeah, that's right. I'd love to have spoken to him, I think, and asked him if he was really sure about the information he put in his books. These days, of course, I mean, a lot of people never even heard of him, but there was a time when he was one of the main voices on all of these subjects. I don't know exactly why he spent so long researching these things. I mean, like the Philadelphia Experiment, I believe he got into that too.
Yes.
But his name's been lost to history. Most young researchers, ufologists these days have either never heard of him or may have come across one of his pocketbooks in a market somewhere, but, you know, I mean, nothing that he wrote has survived the test of time.
Except the Philadelphia Experiment and Roswell, of course. We still hear about the Philadelphia Experiment, and Roswell continues, although we don't remember where it began. Berlitz was such a character. I enjoyed my visits with him. He lived in Glen Cove, New York, and his work area was a converted ship's cabin in his house.
Wow.
You know, spoiled rich man.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, you know, if you look back in the 19th century, a lot of the people who devoted their lives to writing about Atlantis and lost continents and lost races were also very rich, because they had the money to just sit back and write all day long, or to travel around the world looking for evidence. So there was a long tradition of rich people writing about weird mysteries. Yeah. I suppose in a pre-internet age, you needed to move around, which is, of course, why Charles Fort went to live in London for a period.
Well, with Berlitz, he had this old-world character about him. When I first met him, which was on a cable TV show in New York, and we were talking about Bermuda Triangle, and I asked him, "What are you doing next?" And he says, "I'm doing this book on the Philadelphia Experiment." And he talked about the annotated edition of M.K. Jessup's The Case for the UFO. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, I had a copy of that, you know. I think Gray Barker had reprinted it." And he said, "Oh, you do? Wow." And I brought him the copy, which he returned, by the way. And we started the friendship, you know, and I guess he left New York and moved to Florida. Like I said, he was quite a character. In fact, in many ways, he's missed because of that. We don't have characters like that anymore. He was the kind of person, you see him once and you recognize him and you don't forget him. That's kind of sad. We don't have people like that so much in the UFO field. We have all these individualists. Ray Palmer, Richard Shaver, Jim Moseley, Gray Barker. Today we have, you know, some remnants of that era. We have Jerry Clark, of course, and others, but I think we've lost something. I'm a relic myself, but I don't like to say that. Tim, why don't you pick up on the questioning?
Well, I'm just curious. All of the then subsequent, not all of them, but, you know, a lot of the subsequent sightings of UFOs are then described as disc shaped flying saucers, a plethora of photographs showing disc shapes, especially in the 50s and 60s. So, you know, were all of these hoaxes, mistaken impressions of, you know, natural events, things like that? What, you know, I mean, what was going on?
Well, you know, the main reason I started on this book was because I realized that the disc-shaped UFOs have this iconic status. But the fact is they're very infrequently reported in major sighting databases. I mean, the National UFO Reporting Center, NUFORC, is on the internet, with over 150,000 cases, which have been registered since 1980, they show that disc-shaped objects represent about 5%, around 5, 6% of all of their cases, which means that 94% aren't disc-shaped at all. And so discs in this particular database are significantly less than other shapes like lights, triangles, and fireballs. And then, of course, ARRO, the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office that everyone's so excited about recently, they have a pie chart on their website that show that disks comprise just 2% of the cases that they've recorded since 1990. Their records go back. So what I find is that this finding is at odds with the popular portrayal of flying saucers as the quintessential UFO. And I find that saucers is something that's been perpetuated by the media and literature, of course. So, as I said, when I look for saucer shapes with Jacques Vallée, and when we published our book in 2010, we just couldn't find any, practically. I have what's probably the largest collection of pre-1947 UFO cases, which I have my own private collection, and then through my research group, Magonia Exchange, which has collected around 40,000, 50,000 cuttings since 2003. Disc-shaped objects appear in only about 0.02% of cases. So what I would say in the book is that, yeah, maybe some UFOs are disc-shaped, but because most of them aren't, we do have to be quite careful with these photos. I mean, how odd is it that if only between 0.02% and around 5% of cases were reported as disc-shaped over time?
That would mean, of course, that there's a lot we're not reporting there. Chris, Jean, Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
The Silver Lungs Generator is the only all-encompassing professional class product for producing endless colloidal and ionic silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. With recent regulations threatening the sale of silver-based supplements, now you can secure yourself and your family by producing your own silver solutions anywhere, anytime. You can have the peace of mind knowing that you can create endless supply of silver anytime, anywhere, for any application. The Silver Lungs Generator is a one-time purchase that requires no maintenance nor replacement parts for the life of the unit. This product was designed to be an invaluable part of your vital preparations. For a detailed report on the differences between ionic silver, colloidal silver, and what most silver solution manufacturers are producing, please visit our website at www.silverlungs.com for more information on why you should be producing your own silver solutions right from your home forever.
Let me tell you a story about Bill. Bill was a normal guy in his 50s. He had back surgery about 2 years ago. Bill was in a lot of pain. He dealt with his pain by taking the Percocets his doctor prescribed for him. Bill took more and more and more of them to help with the pain, until one day the prescriptions weren't enough to get rid of Bill's pain. Then one day Bill found someone to help him get rid of the pain with illegal drugs he didn't need a prescription for. Fast forward to today. Bill lost his job and his family. The only thing he does have is his drug dealer. If you know Bill's story and you don't want to end up like Bill, call the Detox and Treatment Helpline right now to get away and get treatment.
800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. Call right now. Help is standing by. 800-296-1327.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is Micah Hanks of the Gray Alien Report, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So as we left Chris, he was talking about the fact that only a tiny portion of all these cases are disc-shaped. But that is the pop culture is all about flying saucers.
Yeah. I mean, what kind of coincidence is it that practically every photo of flying saucers, particularly of UFOs, particularly the old black and white and grainy ones, are of saucer shaped? But it was such a tiny percentage of UFO reports previous to Arnold and since Arnold. I mean, flying saucers were really just dominant in a period which was less than the career span of the Rolling Stones, you know, and what I want to do with this book is to challenge and question this idea that UFOs are predominantly disc-shaped. And people are surprised when I point them to the databases and they say, you have a look. I don't have to tell you. Have a look yourself. It's on the ones that are online. I mean, you just see how many are disc. And then what we find is that witnesses often reported their UFOs as saucer or disc-shaped. But when you get down to the actual report itself, they don't even mention it. So sometimes they had completely different shapes, rectangular and triangular, or didn't see a shape at all. But they've checked the little box that says disc, because there's this preconception that UFOs should be disc-shaped. We find it from Fox Mulder's poster on the wall to any jewelry or badges or T-shirts or book covers and album covers that you can imagine. I mean, that's just how we conceive them. One point that I do make in the book, too, is that if you tell a child to draw a ghost, it'll draw a white thing with a sheet over it and two big black eyes. But no one ever sees ghosts like that these days. It would be a joke if someone said that they'd seen a ghost looking like that. It's because discs have become our shorthand to refer to alien spacecraft. And I think that it's time to reflect on that and to question that. And that's why the book's quite challenging.
We have a question from our forums to you. And this is from SRL Plus Paranormal Adept. And they would like to know, would someone ask Chris if there has been a notice uptick of aerial anomalous sightings, disc shape or not, anywhere globally since the onset of the conflict between Russia and Ukraine and as recent as the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
I think it's too soon to know. But it's true that this period also coincides with all this interest in Grush's testament and the government's apparently renewed fascination with the whole UFO field. So I think that what we're going to find is a lot more reports of UFOs, but I don't really think it has to do with the conflict going on. I don't think it has to do with the war, but we're going to find a lot of people speculating in that way very soon, because wars and battles have always been associated with an aerial phenomena. And that's because every generation believes that it's so important that that those people are so important that UFOs, extraterrestrials, our space brothers are bound to show up and want to give us a sign of some kind. It's just something that happens in every generation. People believe that they are so relevant to the universe that extraterrestrials will choose that moment to show up in the sky. I don't really believe that that's what happens, but during periods of conflict, people look for omens. They look for any sign of a divine intervention, and they look upwards. And I think that it's a very good time for looking for UFOs. So, but I think that that would just be a coincidence. I don't think they're that interested in us. That's my personal opinion.
So how would that explain abductions? We assume that they have nothing to do with whatever causes UFOs?
I don't know. I'm not exactly sure how to interpret abductions. What I have done in this series of books, Alien Artifacts, I've been looking back at abduction stories to see how far they go back. And it's I was on the on a documentary series for the History Channel years ago, talking about the parallels between demonology, witchcraft, and alien abductions. There was a book, a manual for witch finders called the Malleus Maleficarum, which I believe was published in 1484 or 1482, something like that. And they talk about how demons and witches interact, and they in a very, very similar way to abductees and aliens. There's a lot of sexual content, in fact. They talk about the demonic parts, genitals, and what they were like. The product from this was often a kind of weird hybrid child, because they would take semen from the man and this, that, and the other. I won't go into details about that now, but it's all there if anyone wants to pick up a copy of the Malleus Maleficarum. And it's so similar to what Jacobs and John Mack described in their books that I don't think that's a coincidence. And then another case I'd love to write about soon is that of Jane Ledd, a late 17th century mystic who lived in London. And she wrote these diaries published under the name of Fountain of Gardens. And in these diaries, it basically says things like, July the 7th, I saw a weird light come down from the clouds and then go back up into the sky, and this kind of thing. I saw a weird chariot with wings in the sky over London. But then she says, well, I've just experienced a transportation. I was looking at a star, a weird star in the sky, and suddenly I found myself there in that star. And then she'd go on to describe a room in which she would encounter other people, and then her conversations with angelic beings who would present her with strange children and babies. And then, of course, you also have fairy folklore, in which you find very, very similar stories of people being abducted by goblins and fairies and so on. My friend Jack Saleh writes about this too in Passport to Magonia. And these people who've been abducted very often are also involved with babies who seem to be very sickly, and the folklorists of the period, folklorists said it's because the fairies are of a dwindling stock. That is to say, they were genetically very weak and they were looking for humans to strengthen their race. That is so similar to abduction stories too, that I don't know what to make of it, but I'd like to publish everything I have in the next couple of years.
My worries about abductions, of course, is when they use hypnotic regression and the problems attendant to using that kind of technique because maybe we're giving people memories of things that didn't occur. But I'm also fascinated by the fact that, as you say, we have legends or stories of people encountering others, other beings, higher beings, whatever they are, for so many years, and we're only interpreting it now as far as our pop culture is concerned. But then again, with UFOs themselves, wouldn't the same thing hold true? What we see is in accordance with our sci-fi culture, Star Trek, all this other stuff, if it was 100 years from now, and things are somewhat different, you know, if we're still here, of course.
That is true, but this is a myth that which has shown in Alien Artifacts, that series of books, because people think today, well, the reason we interpret these things is because of our pop culture, Star Trek and Star Wars and Star Whatever You Want and all these alien invasion series of the 1960s. But you go back 60 years, people were saying exactly the same things. And you go back 80 years and people were saying exactly the same things. So I think it's a myth that we're interpreting weird phenomena as alien visitation, because it is exactly what our grandparents and our great-great-grandparents and our great-great-grandparents did, and that was before science fiction became a thing. So that was the motive I had for writing Alien Artifacts, and a lot of people have read it and said, oh my God, really? I did not know that... For example, in the 1870s, they used the excuse that the Maori people of Australia, the Aborigines of Australia, they said that because these are extraterrestrials and the whole continent of Australia was an asteroid that fell into the Pacific Ocean, of course, that explains the koalas and the kangaroos.
We will find out more about Australia with Gene Tim. And Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you love reading about the mysteries of the universe? Do you wonder what secrets are hidden in the shadows of our own planet? If so, you won't want to miss these two amazing books by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. In Mimics, The Others Among Us, you'll explore the world of the mimics of man, beings that can look like us but are not. They've been among us since the beginning of history, hiding in plain sight, influencing our culture in ways we can scarcely imagine. In Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters, you'll discover the so-called hard evidence of UFOs that's been available for study this entire time, but for the most part has been ignored. These two books will open your eyes to a hidden reality that has been right in front of our eyes all along. That's Mimics, The Others Among Us, and Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. Available now on Amazon.com.
This is an urgent warning. America is heading for another major financial disaster at an alarming rate. We could see stock prices fall as much as 50%, but this time the crash could be more violent and come faster than you ever imagined. We are Advantage Gold, America's most trusted precious metals company, and we are here to sound the alarm that winter is coming for investors. And now is the time to take actions that may help protect and secure your portfolio with physical precious metals. Want to help protect your hard-earned money before it's too late? Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000 and request our free gold and silver survival kit today. Mention that you heard us on the radio and learn how you could get up to $1,000 in free silver coins. The number is 800-900-8000. Call now to get your free survival kit and see if you qualify for $1,000 in free silver today.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.